Right now, though, it's Wednesday. We're counting it on down. We are 73 hours until Miami and Florida kick it off in Orlando. He's the fine columnist for USA Today. Catch his work in the red section of the paper online. It is usatoday.com. On Twitter, the handle is at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, how are you today, sir?
I'm good. What do you have against the 9 a.m. Pacific kickoff, Villanova at Colgate on CBS Sports Network, and the noon Pacific Stanford Youngstown State on ESPN? What do you have against those games?
Honestly, I only had the top 25 games listed, so I didn't incorporate the entirety of football on. I take it all back. I stand corrected.
Well, it's two FCS level games, so we would never probably watch them any other week. But Villanova at Colgate at 9 a.m. and Samford Youngstown State at noon, before Florida Miami, before Arizona at Hawaii, might as well go for it.
All right, no, and especially someone who lived 2 years in Philly and who has been on the Villanova campus, so I'm all in, George.
Well, I have to be honest with you. I'm not sure I knew Villanova had a football program, but here we go.
Well, remember, they had one. Howie Long went there. Then they closed the program down for many years, decades even, and then they brought it back. So you might have fallen in a gray area there.
All right. That could be.
All right. So something we've discussed and – a story a lot of people are following. You know, you had Baker Mayfield win a Heisman, Kyler Murray won a Heisman, and logic indicated the next quarterback would be Jalen Hurts, who transferred to Oklahoma from Bama. But Lincoln Riley insisted there was a competition with Tanner Mordecai. So do you think there was really much doubt? And I guess, what did Riley have to say about the decision to name Hurts his guy?
Well, he said it was a that Jalen Hurts finished slightly ahead in the competition. He emphasized slightly and a little bit and things like that, those kinds of phrases and terms. And I don't know if that's true or not. How would we really know? But, look, I know even on this radio station, I've been saying when Jalen Hurts is named the starter, not if, but when, because it felt like a pretty much a foregone conclusion if you know, all else being equal, if everybody stayed healthy. And I don't know that anybody in the world was shocked, unless maybe Tanner Mordecai or the freshman Spencer Rattler, who was also trying to compete for the job. So I don't know if it was slightly or not. Let me just say this. It might well have been. But this time a year ago, we heard something similar after a guy named Kyler Murray edged out a guy named Austin Kendall for the job to replace Baker Mayfield. And if that's the case, we quickly figured out that there was a pretty big, you know, pretty big gap between those two guys. And that's no slight to Kendall. It's just that's how good Kyler Murray ended up being.
That's for sure.
Kendall, by the way, Austin Kendall named the West Virginia starter this week.
Wow. I mean, you want to talk about an overabundance of talent. So if you look at the numbers the last 2 years, Murray hit 70%. Mayfield was like 69 and change. Hurts has been more about 60, 61. And I read what you were talking about as far as he fits the system. I mean, has Lincoln Riley said that they'll make some tweaks to operate around his strengths, or is he going to have to change to fit into their system?
Well, Lincoln Riley's not really said either way, right? But I do think this. I think it's pretty apparent that they will have to that Jalen probably is a better passer now than he was. I think this is true, than he was when he lost the job at Alabama. But this particular offense is much more pass-heavy in terms – it's not that they don't run the ball, but they require much more of a passer than the offense that he ran when he was the starter. Alabama's offense last year – I'm not talking about it. I'm talking about 2016 and 2017
right.
versus the Oklahoma offense. There's no comparison, Alabama in 2016-17 versus Oklahoma. So I do think it's possible that Jalen Hurts has gotten better. In fact, people have told me he's a better passer now than he was when he lost the job at Alabama. But I also think Lincoln Riley, whether he admits it or not, is going to have to morph the offense to fit him, because the idea that he's going to slice and dice defenses the way the last two quarterbacks at Oklahoma has, have done is hard for me to believe.
Well, they've got an interesting schedule. They open against Houston, week three at UCLA, and I actually want to get to the Bruins because you wrote about Chip Kelly, who had the awful start as a Duck coach, the Boise State game, and his start at UCLA, lost the first five games. But I like the whole gist of the article. Safe to say, like his time in Eugene, Kelly's not going to really alter his way and doesn't really care what we or any outsiders think.
No, he's going to do it his way. It'll either work or it won't, but it's going to be his way and not the way that you think it should be or I think it should be or anybody else thinks it should be. And Chip will, you know, either succeed, which is what I suspect, or he'll sink or somewhere in between, but it'll be done his way.
Talking with George Schroeder of USA Today, and certainly the chipster in college walked into two different situations. Oregon was really good. The circumstances at UCLA, be it talent, recruiting, and as opposed to, I guess, his win-the-day mentality. So in putting your piece together, what's kind of his approach with this program, which, like I said, way different from what he took over here off three straight losing seasons?
Right. No, that's right. And that's the thing, too. So first of all, he found a roster that was depleted, didn't have the same amount of talent either among the sort of the guys that were on the roster as he had when he took over at Oregon. And so you have that. So they played a ton of youngsters last year. They played 21 true freshmen, which was a UCLA record. They're going to have 42 freshmen this year on the roster, which is an amazing number when you consider, you know, that the scholarship limit is 85, right? So basically half your roster. And the other piece of it is, even if he walked into a full roster that was stocked with talent, there's a culture change that every coach wants to make. And Chip being Chip, his is maybe more dramatic and radical than from one conventional coach to the next, if there's that kind of transition. He didn't have to make that change really too much at Oregon because he'd been there 2 years. Or if he wanted to make changes, he understood sort of what the program was like and what the players were like. He'd already been there. So if he wanted to make changes, and I don't think he made radical changes, but he did made some, you know, some tweaks and maybe, I guess, some fairly significant tweaks that first year, he already knew where he wanted to do it. But UCLA was all new to him, and he was all new to the UCLA players. And I think that factoring in with everything else, including the youth on the roster, made it a lot more difficult deal than walking into the Oregon job or getting promoted to the Oregon job from right. already having been there.
I want to get back to the Pac-12 and USC, but I have a general question because I heard a guy on the SEC Network, Cole Kublick, he explained why Clemson is a prohibitive number one, despite the fact their entire defensive line got drafted, three in the first round, one in the fourth. They lost two all-ACC offensive linemen. I think it was Trayvon Mullen, a corner, was a second-round pick. He said they crushed Alabama, and that resonates. And that's one of the, he said that's a big reason that they were such an overwhelming number one. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. Now, you got to have some people coming back. And what you didn't mention is what they have coming back on offense.
Right.
They have perhaps the best quarterback in the country, maybe the Heisman favorite. And look, I'm not forgetting Tua Tagovailoa, right? He was terrific.
Sure.
But Trevor Lawrence was fantastic, and by the end of the year, seemed like maybe the best player in college football. Then you have Travis Etienne, who's one of the top five running backs in the country. You've got a good offensive line. You've got a fleet of receivers led by Justin Ross, who by the end of the year looked like the best receiver on the field, never mind all those talented guys at Alabama. So you've got a bunch of good players on the offensive side of the ball. And defensively, they are going to take a little bit of a hit. There's no question. But they have recruited really, really well, and they feel like they've got talent to fill in on the defensive line to where they're going to be pretty good there again. Now, I'll say this. I think they're going to have some growing pains there. I do think that's true that they've recruited talent. But it isn't – when it comes to those four defensive linemen that they lost from that great defensive line, it's not just the talent they have to replace. It's the leadership. There was some chemistry with those guys that we don't usually see that leaves a big void on that team, too. But I think they're good enough to just run the table or run the score up on a bunch of people and run the table for a long way.
A couple final thoughts for George Schroeder of USA Today. We've talked about it. Clay Helton needs a big year. He's gone. That was their first losing season since 2000. They've got their quarterback situation. Looks good. You wrote about them last week. And he fired T. Martin as his offensive coordinator. So some people, this might need some clarification. He hired a new guy who left, and now he's leaning on a new face, another Mike Leach guy. I mean, what's up with the offensive coordinator in Troy?
Well, let me just say this. When Cliff Kingsbury took the job and they were going to do the air raid, and then got the Arizona Cardinals head coaching job, and so obviously you leave when you get that opportunity. There was some question as to, all right, is Clay Helton really committed to the air raid? And the answer is yes, because he went out and got sort of the next guy on his list, who's Graham Harrell,
right,
who's another former Texas Tech quarterback under Mike Leach, who was at North Texas working with another sort of Mike Leach disciple, the head coach of Seth Luttrell, and had run a really nice offense, and frankly, to be honest with you, had run something that utilizes the run a little bit more than maybe Cliff Kingsbury has, and it might make a little more sense for USC. It's probably a little bit closer. Now, obviously, it was the group of five level, but it was a little bit closer to kind of what an Oklahoma has done with Lincoln Riley, where they run a very physical style out of that air raid, and then they still throw the ball all over the yard, which is what I think the model should be for USC. If you're going to use the air raid. So Graham Harrell gets the call, and we'll see what he can do. I mean, you're right. They've got to win big, and if they win big, it'll probably be because the offense is going good. JT Daniels obviously named the starter this week, yesterday, I guess. That's no surprise. I think he's got every chance to thrive as a sophomore. He was stuck in there too early last year. The air raid will make him look really good. And they've got skill position players. Here's the deal. If they don't have a great offensive line, the air raid will sort of be a nice equalizer. And if they can sort of survive this year, then theoretically the air raid, with the kind of talent that USC can recruit, could really push the Trojans back towards the top in a hurry.
I know this is pure speculation, but maybe it's not an exact number. Maybe it's how everybody feels and the progress they're being made. I mean, safe to say 6 wins, 7 wins or less, he's gone. But does 9 or 8 actually get the job done? What do you feel has to happen progress-wise for him to be the coach again in 2020?
I don't know if there's a number, but you're right. I mean, 7 or fewer probably. I don't know that 8 gets it done. I don't know that 9 gets it done. It kind of depends on who the wins are against and who the losses are against and what the losses look and feel like. But, I mean, I think you probably need to win 10 to really start to feel safe. You need to compete with Notre Dame and with the better teams on your schedule. You probably need to win a bunch of those games, quite frankly. But this is a much more complex scenario than just win or else. I mean, it is that. But who's going to make the decision? Because there are a lot of people that don't know if Lynn Swann, the athletic director, will still be the athletic director by the time that kind of decision would be made. But I'll say this. If USC gets off to a rough start, and I don't think they will looking at their schedule, but if they get off to a rough start, then the watch begins and you could see them make a change, during the season. So there's a ton of pressure on them. There's no question. It's just that I just think everything's up in the air when it comes to Heritage Hall and the Trojans.
Yeah, they've got a fun 5 weeks. I mean, they have Stanford, Utah, at Washington all the first month. So we'll find out pretty quickly. Folks, he's George Schroeder, USA Today, usatoday.com, at George Schroeder on Twitter. George, always my pleasure. And of course, when we talk next week, we will have games to review and preview. So we'll look forward to that.
Man, I cannot wait. We are so close to the big Villanova Colgate tilt that you've been pointing towards for so many months.
About time, George. Appreciate the time as always. Have a great one.
All right. Take care.